This week on the show, The Social Network is the pretty woman of online media, Assassin Spice, and 3D on We. All this on This Week in Media, episode 204. Hey there, boys and girls. We are back with another edition of This Week in Media. I'm your host, Daisy Whitney of the New Media Minute and iMedia and Ad Tech fame. And joining me today is my co-host, and that's my dog shaking in the background in case any of you can hear that collar rattling. Violet is joining us today. But along with Violet, I also have one of my co-hosts, and that is Tim Street. Tim, you're in LA today, but you're taking off to San Francisco, right?
Yeah, I'm doing the Virgin America flight in moments.
And now, when you fly Virgin America, are you online the whole time? Or, I mean, do you take advantage of the wireless? Or do you just, you know, kick back and read, relax, do other things?
Daisy, what do you think? Come on.
You're on wireless, aren't you? You junkie.
Yeah, I also fly Southwest a lot to San Francisco, or, you know, actually to Oakland. And I wish they had the Wi-Fi. It would be great. But it's a short flight.
I like going without Wi-Fi. I really enjoy being on a plane and not being able to get on the internet. Let me tell you who else we have on the show today. We're back by popular demand for an encore performance is Brad Behrens. Brad was on for the first time. Yay! Brad was on for the first time last week. If you guys were able to kind of get through the episode, because I think we had some audio challenges for that one. But Brad is back. Brad is with iMedia and AdTech and many other things. How are you, Brad?
I'm doing great, and I love not having to deal with email on the plane. It's one of the few times when I can read a magazine and not have things interrupt, so I'm with you.
Yes, it's very pleasant. So, and then also, recurring guest, who's also going to be guest hosting in a couple weeks, I'm so excited about that, is my good friend David Bloom, who is a consultant in the Los Angeles area working in the media business. How are you, David?
I am dandy. I survived moving on the hottest day in Los Angeles history last week, and since then it's rained three times. I am completely befuddled by the weather in Los Angeles.
Well, and you use the word befuddled, so there you go.
That's right. You can tell I'm a word guy.
And you know, you have a new name for your company. You used to be Words and Deeds.
No, I'm still Words and Deeds.
You are.
I got that from my social media consulting, but I have a partner on another venture called ThinkGasm. It's a spinoff of an IT sourcing firm that's been around for about a decade called RampRate, and they do sourcing stuff, but they had a research function, and they've spun that off in the digital media consultant. So we focus on everything between the consumer and the content creator, all those distributors and tweakers and guys that get the stuff from the people who make it to the people who consume it.
So after you have a RampRate, you have a ThinkGasm.
RampGate. Ramp, God Almighty! I got to learn how to talk, or you have to learn how to listen. Ramp, right? Two R's.
Can we make that dirty somehow? No. Not on this show.
Not on this show. We just did, but you know, with you, Daisy, anything's possible. So.
Oh, and on that note, let's talk about The Social Network briefly. I didn't see it, so I think we should discuss it. Now, Brad has seen the movie. And it's getting tremendous ratings. And what you said yesterday, Brad, I thought was interesting. Like, you really think this movie is sort of a definitional moment in social media.
I actually think that everyone who's listening to this show needs to go and see The Social Network, because this movie does for the internet business what Pretty Woman did for prostitution. It's going to define us in the popular mind for the next 10 years. It's going to be a while before we get our Leaving Las Vegas. And it's
so you're saying that nobody, that Mark Zuckerberg doesn't kiss? Is that what you're saying?
Not on the mouth. The problem with the movie is that it's terrific, but it's classic Aaron Sorkin, which is this portentous, overblown dialogue, which really works if you're in the White House, but not if you're talking about a site where the vast majority of things are still about getting laid in beer pong. And so there's a kind of disjuncture there, but it's terrific. It's a wild ride. But the movie reviewers can do a much better job at talking about David Fincher and Aaron Sorkin and all of the performances. The important thing, I think, is this is going to be the dominant picture of the people who work in this industry. And I think that means that the people who work in this industry probably ought to see it.
Now, does it matter, David, if, and it doesn't matter for these purposes that you, if you have or haven't seen the movie yet, does it matter if it's not accurate, though? I mean, this is, you know, there's an interesting article in the New York Times about somebody who's been covering Facebook for a long time, and she was saying, okay, this is not accurate, and sort of everything I've done to cover this company almost doesn't matter, because this is all people are going to think about Facebook now.
Right. Well, I mean, I think the way I would look at that is, I mean, I think Kara Swisher over at All Things D, the Wall Street Journal outlet, also has written about this. Is, for one thing, Mark Zuckerberg, not the person portrayed by Jesse Eisenberg. But the reality is, for the people who plunked down $23 million this first weekend, this will indeed be their vision of who, of what Mark Zuckerberg is. And certainly it was a wild ride over the last 5 years to go from zero friends to 500 million and on their way probably to a billion. These are indeed, as Brad says, definitional moments for people outside that that echo chamber of the social media creators world, you know, the axis from Seattle through Silicon Valley down to L.A.
Tim, will you go see the movie?
Absolutely not. I am still waiting to see America Online, the movie, and I'm really upset about this coming out first.
We had America Online, the movie, Tim. It was called You've Got Mail.
Oh,
nope,
that's true.
I disagree. I disagree. That was AOL Instant Messenger.
That was, yeah. And it was also, I might add, much more like Catfish, the documentary that came out just a little bit ago about Facebook. That is terrific, by the way. I strongly recommend that. If you want to think, talk about the users of the social network as opposed to the creators of the social network.
All right, so go see Catfish. It's going to be at an uncomfortable theater where you can't lean your head back. Or go see The Social Network where you can get Twizzlers and popcorn and be comfortable. All right, let's talk about some news. Google TV yesterday, which yesterday officially was October 4th because today is October 5th. Google TV announced its programming partners. And HBO is among them with the HBO Go service. Twitter, woo, because you can't find Twitter anyplace else, you know? Twitter is one of those partners. CNBC is one of its partners. But as the New York Times article points out, noticeably absent are the major networks, of course, ABC, CBS, Fox, NBC, and so on. Just for the specific details of what's going on with Google TV, it's going to be available in time for the holidays, because that's what you want. That's really what you want to find under the Christmas tree or next to the menorah, isn't it? A Google TV. It's going to be built into new Sony high-definition televisions and Blu-ray players and into a Logitech set-top box. Brad, let's start with you on this. Not really a veritable who's who of the media business, but is this enough to get people interested in Google TV?
I don't think anyone in mass is going to buy Google TV at first. I think the biggest news in what you said is that it's going to be built into a lot of the other TVs and set-top boxes. Netflix is fantastic, and I have it on three different devices in my living room, and that kind of pervasive distribution is what's really important. It's also important because it's a real signal that over the top is here, right? We're not Dave Smith from MediaSmith talks about it somewhat esoterically as taking away the dial tone. We're no longer going to have to only go to Comcast or Time Warner or what have you when you turn the TV on. If Google TV is there and it's there with equal placement as your cable provider or your satellite provider, that's a big deal. And I think what we'll see is over 5 years, maybe a little less, that people will start using that more and more the way they use Netflix more and more. But I don't think it's going to be big this holiday season.
David, what are your thoughts on what it's going to take for Google TV to succeed?
Well, I mean, I do agree with Brad in terms of if it's built into the box. And one of the things that one of ThinkGasm's first clients was a domain of the 3D television space. And we were looking very hard at that area. And one of the things that we see is that all the analysts say that the big push that will be going on this year is in connected TVs, and that is TVs that have a bunch of widgets built into them that allow them to access Twitter and Facebook and things like that and to do some stuff. And so Google TV ends up being a package of those things, and it'll be in some of these TVs as a way that they differentiate from just another screen. But the fact that they don't have the networks means that it's still not going to be, you know, the answer compared to the cable guys. But I, it's interesting because, as I said, I just moved, and I did not get cable right away. The house wasn't wired up for it. I got internet right away. I got high-speed internet. And then I've been thinking about, boy, do I want to look at maybe an Apple TV or a Google TV box of some kind?
Because you can do it, David. Come on. The water's nice. Jump in.
Thinking about it. I mean, you know, you look at the prices. I mean, for a single month plus installation fees, for a single month, you could cover the cost of an Apple TV box, you know, and then figure out what you actually want to watch. The only thing that's missing for me is sports.
The specter of sports raises its head again.
Yeah, and for me that actually matters, because that's my version of reality TV is a live sports event. And I don't give a flip about American Idol or Survivor, but I sure want to watch USC football. So
will that be the deal breaker for you? The deal breaker in the sense, over the top just won't cut it if you're a sports fan.
The only savior is half a mile down the road, a very big sports bar.
I like that. Tim, where do you stand on Google TV? You know, I mean, there, of course, have been plenty of connected TVs out there. You and I go to CES every year. You know, we go through the show floor. We see these companies saying, oh, we've got Blip, we've got YouTube, we've got Sony, Crackle, or whatever it is on here. Obviously, there's some, you know, bigger players than just that. But what do you think? Is it enough? And what's it going to take for any of this to be enough?
Well, I got my Apple TV over the weekend, the new one, and got that hooked up. And, you know, it was almost as hard to hook up as a TiVo. And I think that's going to be the big difference with Google TV. If it's built into the TV set, if it's plug and play, you turn it on and all of a sudden you can see things that you want to see. And you can surf the internet. That's what they're saying. That's what the video says. That's what their website says, is that you're going to be able to do both at the same time. So you can be watching Maria Bartiromo on CNBC while you're looking at your stocks online someplace. And if that's true, if that really can happen, that's going to be really valuable.
Dude, I'm getting it then. That is what I have been missing. So along these same lines, in the over-the-top business, we've got some news about what's going on with TiVo and Roku and Hulu Plus. Hulu Plus, of course, is kind of like the premium subscription version of Hulu, essentially. And TiVo did a deal whereby it is going to be offering the Hulu Plus service, and we are also going to be seeing it on Roku devices as well. Brad, we'll start with you on this one again. What does this do for these two players? TiVo is a funny company, right? I mean, they're always doing some kind of deal, and it reminds you that they're not dead.
Right. It's not dead yet, I think, is the really the key word.
Not dead yet.
Not dead yet. Yes, you are.
So I loved my TiVo box, and I thought that TiVo was a superior service to the Comcast DVR service by orders of magnitude. But I was not about to pay an extra $20 a month on top of what I'm already paying just to get that box when the Comcast box is okay. And the thing that TiVo needs to do is stop cutting deals with other over-the-top people like Netflix, and to finally get that Comcast deal that they've been talking about, where for an extra $5 or $10 a month, there would be a TiVo overlay on top of the software that you already have. That's going to be their saving grace. But no one wants to pay extra. The whole cord-cutting thing is, which we keep on talking about again and again, and which is never going to happen in my house but may happen in David's house, is a side issue to the fact that no one wants to pay twice for something they're already getting for free.
Hey, David, what are your thoughts on TiVo? I mean, do you think it's going to be possible for this company to actually be incorporated and built into the cable boxes? I mean, that Comcast deal was announced, I don't know, what was it, 5 years ago maybe?
I think you were still in kindergarten. I know that's only been like 6 years, but I mean...
No, that's close, you're right.
As a child prodigy, I understand the time is sort of an elastic thing for you. But... you know, they've been. I remember back in the day interviewing Stacey Jolna at TiVo, and they were talking about, well, we realize that the hardware play is not our future. And what are they doing? They're still selling hardware. I mean, they got to be a service, but I think Brad's correct in terms of you want an APG, but geez, who wants to pay for TV Guide? TV Guide doesn't even get paid for anymore. And so it's really hard to figure out where they fit after millions of dollars. I don't know how many bankruptcies, restructurings and everything else. It's really kind of hard to figure out, you know, why we need them instead of sort of a generic other service. Even though people really like what TiVo is, they're not going to pay, you know, this another layer, another stack, you know, I can't really value it and all that. And so I just think there's another BK out there waiting for them someday. And
Tim, what about Hulu Plus? I mean, what's interesting here is we've got Hulu Plus doing a couple of deals. I don't know if this says anything about sort of Hulu's prospects. I mean, I guess I wonder, you know, Hulu, I think, is probably a company that's still doing fairly well. But as these other services kind of grow and expand, I mean, is Hulu a company that's going to need a boost?
Well, I think they're going to need something, because if cable networks put their programming on Hulu, they are going to have huge pushback from the MSOs. If you look at, you know, a network like Fox, or Fox networks in general, I guess, not just the broadcast network, they're making billions from their subscriptions each year. That can't be replaced with Hulu. So they can't bite the hand that's feeding them. The MSOs hate Hulu. It's going to be interesting to see how Hulu survives and, you know, presents a different case so that it can grow.
Hey, Brad, when you said that cord cutting would never happen in your house, is that because of sports?
No, not at all. I think it's just because I like HD a lot, because there's a variety of programming that you get that is curated in a way that I think is great. Now, this is my generation talking. I'm 42. My children don't know a world without TiVo, but I just find the internet to be a mess. It's impossible to figure out what's worth seeing, and no matter how many people I follow on Twitter, most of the time it's not all that interesting when I click. And I actually like the curation of media brands, because it helps me to go, oh, I've heard of that. That sounds good. That's following this. Again, that I probably just said to most of the hipsters listening to this show that I'm a dinosaur that's about to collapse into a pool of petroleum.
Hey, you know, a lot of our hipster friends who listen to the show have cable too, and you know, they're admitting it. They're fessing up. They're saying, yeah, I like my whatever cable networks. What are those networks on cable anymore? Other interesting news, Disney's interactive division named digital co-presidents. This is a story that came, David shared this with me, and came from The Wrap. One of the gentlemen heading it are John Pleasance and Jimmy Pitaro. Jimmy Pitaro is somebody I've talked to for a lot of different stories. He was at Yahoo recently, was sort of heading up many of their online video ventures, overseeing content over there. Definitely somebody who ought to kind of a high-profile role at a portal in content creation. But co-presidents, interesting. Does it ever work, David?
Well, I'm casting about in vain, I think. Actually, the last time I think it worked was back when Warner Brothers had Bob Daly and Terry Simmel running them. Back when Brad Behrens was not just a dinosaur, but there were a lot of dinosaurs gamboling about in the swamplands of Hollywood. So I think really difficult. Now, what's more interesting to me is that Steve Wadsworth had run Disney Interactive for 11 years. And you want to talk about going back to the dark ages of the internet. This was back when the first bubble hadn't burst yet, and we can certainly find lots of ups and downs in Disney's interactive initiatives in the time since then. Now they're going to split that operation into two things. Each of them has a discrete part that they're going to take care of. And so Pleasance is going to be in charge of all the game stuff. And he's going to be based up north in the Bay Area. And I think that's not going to be a fun place to be when you're kind of isolated from the mothership, because though it's hard to believe, Burbank is, in fact, Disney Central, and all the actions going on down there, from a political standpoint, I think it's going to be very interesting to see how they interact. Though the game business, the social game business, is a massive opportunity, Disney, like a lot of other companies, is struggling mightily to figure out how to take advantage of it. You know, they bought Club Penguin, they bought Playdom, which is where Pleasance is still going to be running Playdom, but doing everything else. I mean, they clearly understand that they need to get into this space. It's great for them, but they're, they're carving it up without actually quite carving it up. It's an odd structural approach, I think.
Brad, what do you think about the structural approach, but what do you also think about sort of where Disney is at right now with its interactive media group and sort of all of these different assets that it has and interests that it has?
I think that there's nothing wrong with co-presidents, and the fact that Mike Jones and Jason Hirschhorn were only briefly co-presidents at MySpace is a non-issue. I think that this is interesting because Disney is bringing some people who have real interactive cojones and deep internet DNA into their behemoth media company. Don't ever bet against the mouse. They're incredibly good.
And they're really big. Yeah. And they're really, really, really big. I mean, I think that's the other thing that people don't understand. The thing here's the other thing I think that's really fascinating is there's no talk in here at all about ESPN.
And yeah,
go
that
back
was
to sports.
Really true.
That's a $20 billion brand, okay? It is the single most valuable piece of a $55 billion company. And there's no conversation here about ESPN.com and all the initiatives that ESPN is doing. It's doing its own thing. And I think that's pretty fascinating.
But hasn't that always been the case? I mean, Disney has done a good job at kind of keeping the pieces appropriately separate. I mean, ESPN, I think, has always very much had its own interests. I mean, Brad, what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's more about the prejudice of journalists than it is about the corporate structure of Disney. I think that journalists tend to focus on content. We're content creators if we're journalists. So we focus on scripted things. We focus on drama. We focus on comedy. We bemoan the existence of reality TV. But I think in pound for pound, the amount of time spent on sports versus the amount of time spent on everything else, probably about equal.
Now, Tim, did you ever have the chance, and have you ever had the chance to talk to Jimmy Pitaro? I mean, you're out there on the conference circuit. You're talking to a lot of these folks. Did you ever have the chance to talk to him? And even if you didn't, what were your thoughts on sort of the work that he did at Yahoo with original video, branded video, and so on?
No, I didn't have a chance to talk with him, but we have become friends on Club Penguin. And you know, in terms of the stuff
that's a special bond, by the way.
Yeah, it's funny inside the local LA video creators scene. Yahoo has been invisible for the last couple of years, and they're just starting to reemerge to where we're seeing them at events. They're really focused on doing video that has something to do with what people are searching for. That seems to be the thing. And I've talked to a few people over in the development department over there, and they're upset with Hollywood creators coming to them and pitching them ideas that have nothing to do with the type
Research.
Of video that they're doing. It's like, do you look at our videos? Do you understand what we're trying to do here? But it's a great show. Yeah, for somebody else. Thanks for coming in. So it'll be interesting to see what happens at Yoohoo. It'll be interesting to see what happens
at Yoohoo.
Chocolate soda, 24 hours.
You know what? I'm still looking for strawberry Yoohoo. If anybody knows where I can find a bottle of strawberry Yoohoo, let me know, because my good friend Ted Shilowitz at Red wants a bottle of strawberry Yoohoo, and it's driving me nuts.
I'm thinking Tennessee. That's where you go.
So,
Tim, there's this thing called eBay.
It doesn't work for liquids for some reason. I don't know. And I've even tried calling the corporate number. They don't return my phone call. Anyway, I digress. It's going to be interesting to see what happens here at Disney. And I agree with David. Having somebody away from the home office is a great opportunity for them to get ousted.
Yeah, it really does seem that's a tough position for Pleasance to be in. I mean, it's kind of like, who cares? You're stuck up here. Nobody's going to interact with you. Your opinion's not going to be asked on that many things. I think that's definitely a tough spot to be in.
unless you're bringing the bucks in, then it's different. Yeah.
I wanted to add one more thing to what Tim was saying about the shows that Yahoo is doing. You know, MSN is pursuing a similar strategy with video as a portal. We're definitely seeing that at the non-Google portals when it comes to what they're actually producing for original content. I mean, most of their video shows are centered around finding the interesting quirks behind what people are searching for. Like if somebody's searching for, you know, the Shroud of Turin on a certain day, we're going to explain why or something. Which, you know, it makes sense. I mean, you're kind of, you know, tapping into your own expertise. Let's talk a little bit about social gaming. That was a story that was a component that was touched on with this Disney executive move. And of course, it ties nicely into Facebook Assassin Creed. David, I'm going to let you explain this story because I don't entirely get it.
Okay, well, I'm a big believer of the game space because I think that you know, it had a nice run as classic console space, $30-40 billion a year worldwide. Not a bad little business, you know. For several years now, it's had a little bit bigger domestic box office than the theater business, though, of course, none of the downstream stuff. So what's happened is in the last 2 to 3 years, first the Wii came along from Nintendo and blew up a whole new audience in the hardcore console space with casual gamers who wanted to play. And then what also happened was the sort of complete arrival in things like Facebook and other social media applications of games that tied into the social networks. And so again, we had a further expansion of casual gaming. Just this week, Ubisoft, one of the bigger of the publishers out there, announced an integration between a social media game based on one of its current franchises, Assassin's Creed. There have been two Assassin's Creed titles out there. A third one's coming called Brotherhood. They're going to integrate the hardcore console game that you would spend $60 on with the game that they have sitting on Facebook that is also in the Assassin's Creed world. And you play through the Assassin's Creed on Facebook, and it gives you access to assets and opportunities in the hardcore console game and vice versa.
So it's looping the two games together. It's looping kind of the low core, if you will, Facebook.
Softcore and hardcore.
Sorry. Yeah, why am I not surprised you? You would correct me when I messed up those terms.
The R-rated version and the triple X. No, seriously, what it does is it's attempting to bridge two very different gaming audiences in some very interesting ways. And I think that the implications, and this is really the first time this has been done, and I think the implications are very interesting about how the game world develops. What we've seen on the hardcore side is that they've been a little anemic the last couple of years. First of all, they had a hard time reacting quickly enough to the Wii transformation. And two, they've been, you know, like EA and other companies have been going crazy trying to buy into the social gaming space. So they're trying to catch up while their console side has been anemic. It's done well. It's still making billions of dollars. It's just not making the money it should be making. So they've had to retool all their teams and their structures. But again, this is a $40 billion business worldwide. It is not chicken feed. And
David,
transforming.
David, I have a question for you. Okay. The thing that occurred to me as I was reading the article was this. Are people on Facebook able to play with each other, either other Facebook players or with console game players, in real time? Is there a synchronous component?
No, not in this. I have to play with the Assassin's Creed in Facebook, but typically, as you're aware, a lot of the social games, they do have a connection, but it's not like you're it's not like I'm sitting and playing Battlefield Bad Company 2 multiplayer and I'm blowing up guys, you know, in real time. It's more like I do a quest and things happen and it plays out and I tell my friends and then I get them involved in my guild and some of those kinds of things. So you're sharing things and you're doing quests, but it's not like you're facing off with sword fights. Because they really don't, you know, they're trying to deal with the bandwidth limitations that are inherent in that social game space. It's a different kind of play, and it's really about connecting and building relationships. So
one of the things that I want to talk about briefly with this is a quote in the story is, you know, from somebody involved in the gaming company. The theory is that more and more of our brands will matter to you because you'll be creating carry-on value from your play and interaction in one type of game. Brad, obviously, you know, this is what you do. I mean, this is what you and I talk about day in and day out, brands and sort of how they're reaching customers in new ways. And this is, I mean, this is not to tout AdTech New York, but we do have a session on virtual gaming and virtual worlds and social gaming and just kind of looking at this. From where you sit, how big a deal is it to brands to be involved in different ways in these type of games and in this social gaming world?
I think it really depends on the title. There are most of the brands out there that are going to be rather leery about getting involved in something called Assassin's Creed. There are so many games that are so edgy and so R-rated, and most of the, you know, ANA's top 100 advertisers are going to run screaming from that sort of thing.
But Axe will be all over it, I guarantee you. And there's going to be some others that are young guy centered that are going to be all over it. Some of the cable channels are going to want to advertise for it.
I agree with you that edgier brands are there. Axe tends to index in its advertising towards cheesecake, right? Towards sexy girls wearing very little. But they also are, since they're owned by Unilever, they have to be a little bit careful about what they do. So I don't think you're going to see an assassin using Axe antiperspirant in the middle of the game.
It might help. It might help the assassin do better, though.
That's true. It would be slaying the ladies.
And not, but they wouldn't be using Old Spice, would they? Sorry.
They might.
You never know.
You never know.
What if we had like a mashup of Assassin's Creed and the Old Spice guy?
Assassin's Spice?
Yeah, how about that?
Now there. When I go out,
oh my god, we just created a new flavor.
When I go out to kill the Archbishop, I always wear Old Spice. That's your marketing thing, you know. For it's a 15th century Old Spice. It's really Old Spice.
And you watch the assassin say, "Goodbye, ladies."
Goodbye, ladies.
But more so, it is interesting just to see there is so much involvement from consumers in social games. So it's natural that brands are going to be exploring it and that game publishers are going to be looking into it. Tim, what are your thoughts on kind of tracking this growing area of social gaming and brands getting involved and so on?
Well, I think the two things that we haven't talked about here are the brands sponsoring virtual goods and doing rev shares. So let's say that you had a clothing maker who's got a certain shirt or a dog collar or whatever that, you know, it could be a weapon that is somehow branded in the game that you have to pay money to get. And so there would be a rev share for that branded virtual good. I think that's a big money maker for brands so that they're not paying money to put their advertising there. They're getting paid to put their advertising there. That's a big differentiator, and I think that's something that's going to be huge going forward. The other thing that there's a lot of talk about, a lot of rumblings going on, is that with the economy being so bad right now, a lot of people are expecting online gambling to be legalized to help the government pay for things. Mm-hmm. And if that does happen, that opens up a whole new world in video games. To imagine both on the social end and a Facebook side, as well as a multiplayer game like World of Warcraft, to have betting going on, it's mind-boggling.
How big is online gambling?
It's several billion dollars, but that's several billion dollars despite people being thrown in jail. There was a piece just 3 or 4 days ago. Having worked for MGM, I tend to follow the gambling business a little bit with interest. And the gaming companies are now warming to the idea. They have been the major impediment to legalization in this country, but they see it as a way. They're not necessarily seeing it just as competition because they understand that they have big brands that could own that space and have physical places where they can provide, you play on the MGM Grand online site, and then you get an affinity card which pulls you into the MGM Grand Hotel and gives you comp rooms and all this stuff to go gamble in person. So that's they get that. So that's going to happen.
Let's not forget about the flip side, which is suddenly people could be betting on Halo Reach tournaments.
Yes.
And G4.
Well, in Korea they will be.
Exactly. Well, in Korea, what aren't they betting on?
What's a Halo Reach tournament, Brad?
If you have a bunch of people playing a game and you have two different teams, it could be Halo Reach. I don't even know which game it would be. But Halo's suddenly you have other people pulling in and rooting for a particular team. You could imagine G4 would have tournaments that they would be but playing on their cable channel, and people betting in real time. The interest in gaming, in video gaming, is high. You add the possibility of winning or losing money, that's going to make an even bigger dopamine rush that happens every time someone clicks, and you have a whole new way for people to spend money.
Speaking
Halo Reach, by the way, $200 million opening week. Not a bad day. Not a bad day's work.
Now, speaking of a dopamine rush, apparently the entire Star Wars saga is being converted to 3D and will pop up in theaters sometime around Valentine's Day 2012, according to The Hollywood Reporter. So I guess we're going to kick off with The Phantom Menace. So, yes, if you have been jonesing to see Jar Jar Binks, like, right in your face, people, soon you'll be able to. Brad, enough 3D, or is there just never going to be enough 3D content?
Well, first of all, it's so sad that girlfriends of geeks and nerds across the planet will have to spend their Valentine's Day in 2012 suffering through yet another marathon of the Star Wars series, as if they haven't paid enough.
That presumes, of course, that they have girlfriends.
That's true. That's true. But I am essentially an optimist. I'm bored by 3D. I take my kids to 3D. My 5-year-old can't figure out that he has to keep the glasses on, so he winds up watching this beautiful Matisse painting without the glasses. The glasses are always disgusting and filthy, and I can't see anything. I'm over 3D. I'm seeing Megamind in glorious 2D. It doesn't work for me. I'm tired of it. And any movie that is being retrofitted with 3D afterwards, like Alice in Wonderland, which was shot in 2D and then 3D-ified, it just doesn't matter.
Speaking of when Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows comes out, I'm going to be going to the 2D version. I have no interest in seeing that movie in 3D. I have been completely satisfied with that film franchise in 2D, and I don't need to watch it with glasses. David, 3D.
3D. Well, first thing, all the content creators, i.e. studios, all the networks, all the hardware makers see 3D as a major opportunity for them to make a lot more dough. And as a result, you're seeing an extraordinary push behind 3D. We will have 7,500 screens by year's end in 3D. We will have, which will deal with some of the 3D screen problems. We will have 80 films next year in 3D coming out. It will be part of how we see films in many cases. Now, Brad was right that Tim Burton shot Alice in Wonderland in 2D and had it converted. He did that, and that is actually a pretty common trend now, particularly for directors who know how to shoot but don't know how to shoot in 3D, and they want some flexibility. I did a lot of conversations with some of the big post-production houses about this. This is an opportunity for them. So they start out shooting in 2D knowing that they're going to do a conversion in post to 3D where they can fix the plane, you know, the exact plane of focus and all that, and really tweak this to their heart's content. So it's only an issue when you've got Clash of the Titans where they shoot in 2D and think at the last minute, oh, we should convert it to 3D now to make a quick score. And that was a disaster. I actually thought Alice in Wonderland looked great in 3D, but they did it in a thoughtful way. It was a technique and not a panicked rush to try and cash in at the last minute. So 3D going forward, it's going to be there. It's going to be there's already 25 to 30 TV screens that are 3D capable. We are Toshiba just put out the first Glasses 3 screen for 3D. It was a very clever little trick that they used to do that. But it's limited in terms of you got to be in certain sweet spots to be able to see it. 3D is going to be there. 3 years from now. 2014 is going to be everywhere. I'm just telling you, it's going to be everywhere.
All right, but is there a risk of 3D on Wii? Tim, what do you think?
Oh yeah.
You know, I was down when this story came out. I went down to the Chinese theater to wait in line so that I could be the first to see it. But they gave me a loitering ticket. And
yes, because you had your Darth Vader outfit on.
That's right,
see,
I did.
That's what you needed.
And I hadn't washed it, and I smelled a little bit like a homeless person,
or so, somebody sitting out in front of there for photos. But yes.
I think gaming is going to be the savior of 3D. I think right now 3D is a spectacle. It's novelty. It's definitely resurrected. I don't know if it's going to be as ubiquitous as color unless we get rid of the glasses. If there is a way to make 3D work without the glasses, I think it's going to be big. But it's like you have a hard enough time finding a remote. Imagine if you're inviting people over and you can't find your 3D glasses. Somebody's stuck and they can't watch the show because they don't have a pair of glasses. A football game's on and they can't watch because they don't have the glasses.
Worse, it's $150 to $180 for these active shutter glasses. So they've got to get the prices down and then get rid of them. You're absolutely right.
I think it's a novelty until the glass situation gets worked out, except in gaming, because I think gamers...
And sports.
Well, gamers don't lose their glasses. Yeah. Anyway, that's actually a proven statistic. Hey, one more quick story I want to touch on very briefly, and then we're going to wrap things up. Going back to America Online, the movie that Tim is still waiting for. I think the reason you haven't seen the movie yet, Tim, is because AOL has been on a bit of a shopping spree. Last week, it bought TechCrunch as well. And TechCrunch, obviously, very, very, you know, well-known, cantankerous, popular tech blog. I still sort of have a hard time picturing Michael Arrington as part of the AOL fold. But be that as it may, money speaks. And, hey, I would sell too. And also Five Min, a company that I've really enjoyed following for the New Media Minute and other places, a video syndication network with more than 2 million kind of how-to type of videos, also sold to AOL. Tim, I'm going to start with you on this one, and we'll wrap it up from here. Significance to this?
Yeah, if you don't like what somebody's saying about you in their tech blog, just buy them. I'm excited to see what happens with this because Michael Arrington is cantankerous but so was Jason Calacanis, and he worked at AOL for a little while.
When was he at AOL?
A couple of years. They bought his blog network or whatever it was.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Interesting.
What was it called? He had Weblogs Inc. Weblogs Inc. That's it. Thank you. Yeah, that's what he had. Yeah, they bought it. And he was there for a couple of years before he headed off to his next adventure.
Brad,
AOL has an incredible history with buying companies, bringing their entrepreneurs in house, taking the entrepreneurs, burning them into husks of themselves until they leave to start a new company. Jason Calacanis, Mike Jones, Dave Morgan, there's a whole bunch of these folks. But that was under previous regimes. I have a lot of faith in Tim Armstrong, and I think that he may be able to keep some of these people around and productive and engaged and interested. I'm also, however, feeling that this is the least interesting story about AOL. Far more interesting from last week was Kara Swisher's column suggesting that it was time for Yahoo and AOL to merge, for Carol Bartz to be bumped up to chair, for Tim Armstrong to be made the CEO of a combined company, for them to leverage all of the things that they compete on right now, like email and instant messenger, and really then start squaring off against their true competitors, Google or Apple or Microsoft, and to stop infighting against companies that are shaped exactly the same way. And
do you
start
think that
really
will happen, Brad?
No, I think that the acquire Yahoo or Yahoo acquire, I think that ship has sailed. I wish it hadn't. I still think that the single best company to acquire Yahoo would be Sony, because all of a sudden they would have a massive digital distribution arm for all of their different kinds of content, but they don't listen to me.
Hey, David, quick wrap up from you. Now apparently we're talking about who's going to acquire Yahoo or AOL. What do you think?
Well, I think at the rate things are going, Carol Barth will be the only person left to run Yahoo. And so it won't actually be that big a deal for them to merge, and it'll just be, you know, integrating their post office. Though I actually understand from people who know these things that a big chunk of Yahoo's already been effectively subsumed within another very large company whose initials start with M. So.
Oh, right. David, where can people find you online?
Thinkgasm.com, at David Bloom on Twitter, and Facebook, LinkedIn, all those nice things.
Brad, where would you like people to find you online?
You can find me at Brad Behrens on Twitter, bradbehrens.com, and please come see me live and in person at AdTech November 2nd, 3rd, and 4th.
I'll be there, too. Tim Street, where can people find you?
You can find me at my blog, where I blog about web and mobile video, onetimstreet.com and mdialog.com.
All right, very good. Keep up the good work at mdialog. If you're looking for me, Daisy Whitney, you can find me at daisywhitney.com. You can find my novel, The Mockingbirds, on Amazon, and you should just go buy it right now. And also I'm on Twitter, of course, Daisy Whitney Dismissed. You've been listening to was recorded on October 5th, 2010. We are over and out.
This Week in Media is a PixelCore.tv production produced by Suzanne Llewellyn with technical producers John Riley and Alutha Jamankar. Content contributor is Jason Perrier.